And welcome to another Saturday on Woods and Water, South Carolina. I agree with Mike. Cops' lives matter. Lions' lives matters. The zebras' lives matters. I mean, you know, okay. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to be that flippant starting off here today. But if you really want to talk flippant, let's see. What, 2 weeks ago I said if you're looking for an 8 in the temperature, you're going to see it after a 9. You know, normally I'm wrong when it comes to weather forecasts, but I've been right for 2 weeks. And, you know, maybe we'll get some relief coming towards the end of this week. But it's been a long, hot, dry summer. Wow. Anyway, you're listening to Woods and Water, South Carolina. My name is Roger Metz. Be with you for the next hour. I always hesitate to say what the show's about because I don't want people tuning in or tuning out based on what they do or don't like. But this one's going to make you think a little bit. It's, you know, I mentioned Cease of the Line. We're going to talk a little bit about this simply because it enters the realm of hunting, trophy hunting, and the big discussion that surrounds that. Even, you know, going down to deer hunting, trophy is what you define it as. I mean, it's a little different when you go to Africa because it does cost a lot to hunt in Africa. So therefore, yes, you want maybe something different than the experience. You want the experience too. Maybe you do want that big head. But anyway, we're going to delve into that a little bit. We're going to talk about this, the two kids in Florida, which just, as a parent, just breaks my heart. If you've kept up with it at all, the two youngsters who out fishing and, you know, it's been 8-9 days now since they left. It was Friday a week ago. And then the boat was found Sunday afternoon, overturned. So we're going to talk a little bit about that, too. And if it gets too deep in here, I got some other stuff. We can lighten up the atmosphere a little bit. We're going to try playing a television ad for you, which is really powerful. I want you to – luckily, there's a lot of talking and, you know, the videos in the background, and you can understand the commercial just listening to it. So and going along with the advice of my highly paid show consultant at home, I'm going to just stick with the regular format. We're going to talk about the calendar events, and then we'll go into the rest of the show. So speaking of the show, you know, you can find us all over Facebook, on the web. If you want to listen to this show and you're not in town, you can go to the 94.5 website, which is conservativetalk945.com. Hit the Listen Live link on the right-hand side of the page. Tune in radio. Another great place to listen to the show, and I podcast and put them up the next week on the website. So let's get through this calendar event and just see where the rest of the show takes us. It's going to be a fun one. Department of Natural Resources, if you boat, you have a boat, if you like to enjoy South Carolina's lakes, rivers, coastline, you're encouraged to attend a series of meetings that the Department of Natural Resources has scheduled around the state, potential regulation changes to make South Carolina waterways safer. The first one was already held July 28th. The next one is August 6th, Horry Georgetown Technical College in Conway. August 11th, Fort Johnson Marine Center in Charleston. August 13th, Crowder's Creek Elementary School in Clover. August the 25th, the DNR office down there in Clemson. And September 8th, Center for Advanced Technical Studies in Chapin, South Carolina. And I don't know what they're going to come up with. I'm going to try to go to the 25th one. And I may try to get someone in here from DNR. The next 2 weeks are going to be packed. And then, hey, we've got the FLW Cup, Hot Springs, Arkansas. Boy, you want to talk about hot. I looked at the temperature forecast out there. They're running like 99, 100, 102 all the way through the 15th. And I'm thinking, yes. And I'm going to be out on that water for 9 hours every day. I don't know. You know, it'd make a difference, I think, if I was fishing. Just watching somebody fish, it takes on a whole different meaning to be hot and not be able to move out of the boat. The next few are all about food and raising money. So you've got two Quality Deer Management Association Sportsman's Bank, which you've got the Low Country Branch, which is down in Mount Pleasant, South Carolina. It's August the 6th. Tickets $25, $50, $300, $500 for table. Contact Freddie St. Laurent. If you go to QDMA, you can always go to their events page under South Carolina. You can find all the information you need to about all these and buy tickets right there online, too. But you've got Low Country Branch, and I believe actually tonight is the Lakelands Branch right here in Greenwood. So if you've got a few hours, you can buy a ticket at the door. You want to go support Quality Deer Management Association, run down to Greenwood. I know Eddie Montz and those guys. They'd love to see you and love to have you in. And on the same day, August the 6th, you got the Midlands Branch, the 12th Annual Fundraising Banquet. That's down at the Jameel Temple Auditorium in Columbia, South Carolina. Again, their tickets are a little different, $50.75, and they have a gold sponsor for $1,200. Youth, $25 for 17 and under. So if you're interested in supporting Quality Deer Management Association, getting involved in the chapters, membership, and want to know more about what they do, these are great ways to learn. At the same time, you're contributing to some of the programs they do, like the Rack Pack, getting youth involved in hunting. South Carolina Wildlife Federation, August, it's their auction and wild game feast, August the 8th, down at Seawells Catering in Columbia. Oh, wild game, wild items, and wild times. And they do. They do the venison, quail, duck, alligator, catfish, shrimp, and more. The attire is business casual, which is a lot different from some other banquets that I've been to. The Wildlife Federation is a nonprofit organization. Primary source of funding is through membership and general donations. They turn around and help the Department of Natural Resources with projects or outreach programs that they don't have in the budget already. So it's a great, really neat organization too. And we've had Jim Goller on. He is the chair. He has talked to us about some of the stuff they've had going on. So this is a really good one. And boy, they tell you, they have some stuff. Now, they don't have the list from this year. Last year, they had live auction items, like an extended weekend in Caesar's Head at somebody's condominium, the Mills House weekend in Charleston, world-class trout fishing in Patagonia. Let's see, three-night weekend stay at the Creekside Home in McClellanville. That's on Jeremy Creek, and that is a cool little place. Well, five bedrooms. It's not little, but it is a neat place in Jeremy Creek. African safari photo safari, turkey hunts. I saw another one. Argentina dove hunt, snow goose hunting. And then they had other things, which I thought were really cool. An 18-layer chocolate cake, 9-layer chocolate cake. They had a little game where you tossed a ring, and if you rang a wine bottle, you took it home with you. Moonshine package. They had other things like a weekend on the Edisto River and what essentially is a treehouse, but it's nice. It's on beams and glassed in all the way around. So that's one you might want to make room for. The South Carolina Wildlife Federation's Wild Game Night and fundraiser down in Columbia, South Carolina. The National Wild Turkey Federation, August the 13th to the 16th, this is for you sporting clay shooters, is going to have their turkey shoot, which is kind of cool. The National Wild Turkey Federation have a turkey shoot at the Palmetto Shooting Sports Complex down there in Edgefield, South Carolina. It starts Thursday. You got targets and games on Friday with divisions, you know, your regular sporting clays, your five stand, sub-gauge categories, pump and side-by-sides, fun games. I know they'll probably have the long target, which I always thought was fun to watch it. They're going to have that Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Friday night, they've got to attend the gun bash at the shooting complex. And Saturday night, Michelin is sponsoring a banquet at the downtown Marriott in Augusta. So put that one on your list. I think I got one or two more here. We'll pick those up on the other side of the break and then get into today's show, which should be interesting. So hang on. We'll be back in a few. Welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. We were finishing up with the calendar of events. The National Wild Turkey Federation shoot, giving away like 42 guns, plus cash and prizes and everything else. So that's a, boy, I tell you, I remember when I used to shoot a lot of sporting clays, how much fun it was. Yep, then you got married and had kids. Oh, me, some things are irreplaceable, and I'm not talking about sporting clays. So go have fun. Go shoot some clays. I'm actually going to be down at the National Wild Turkey Federation on August the 12th, and I'm hoping to get a good tour of the place and then get some of them because they've got some – I saw an article the other day about how many events they were going to be holding down there over the next 18 months, and it was unbelievable. National Wild Turkey Federation is going to go big as far as getting people involved. August the 15th, 5:30 to 9:30 here in Greenville, South Carolina. You've got the 3rd annual Southern Mountains chapter of the Rough Grouse Society. Their banquet, Larkin's on Main Street's where it's going to be. Heavy Ores Divorce. Did I get that right? No, I didn't. Okay, I slaughtered that one. But anyway, you can and their brochure is really neat. They've got what they do. If you went to the National Rough Grouse Society, you don't hear much about them. I had a really good friend back when we lived in Chester, Danny Smith, who was killed in a car wreck, and I believe it was probably 95, maybe 96. But his favorite thing was that he had Irish setters. I mean, big, tall, red Irish setters with better noses than in a lot of bird dogs I know of. And they would go to the mountains and spend like a week living in the back of his truck grouse hunting. And I wanted to go and never does. One of the biggest regrets of my life is not taking him up on his offer to take me grouse hunting. So if you're interested in the Rough Grouse Society and what they have to offer, that again in Greenville on August 15th, and you can go to their website and find more information. The Glendale Outdoor Leadership School has got one of their solo wilderness first aid courses coming up August 15th and 16th. It's a two-day course, $140. You can add on CPR for $35. I know they did a lot of things with the South Carolina Parks this summer, offering some of these courses. Had a really good response. This is a little more in-depth than the one-day courses they were teaching, but get in touch with them. It's setgoals.org. Find out more about them, and they list a lot of the things they're going to go over. Backcountry essentials. I mean, this is geared towards somebody who enjoys being out there. If you have a group, maybe you want to send one person to this course, though somebody in your group, when you're taking one of these hikes or doing these outdoor activities, somebody knows how to handle emergency situations, which is, and Jay has been on here and talked to us about the courses and just a really good thing to do. And finally, I ran across this one, August the 28th, 6 to 8:30 p.m., the Caw Caw Interpretive Center in Ravenel, South Carolina. And this is for those of you who are trying to get one more trip into the beach or Charleston before school starts back. This is a sunset moonrise paddle. Friday, August the 28th, you're going to glide through the Caw Caw's old canals and rice fields. Should be a really good time. Ages 9 and up, and I saw this and I said, up, there are only 5 spots left. So if you're interested in doing something like this, better get on this one because it's not going to last long. And that's the calendar events. And this is just a place to start. There is so much out there to do. I could do the whole show on just things that are going on outdoors, but I just don't have, you know, I'd rather get to some of this other stuff too. So this is a place to start. I try to remember to put these up on the website, and sometimes I just too busy to do it. But anyway, Nature Valley has a commercial out there. It's called Nature Valley 3 Generations. It's a rediscover nature. It's a powerful video. It's 3 minutes long. I'm going to play it here in a second. Disclaimer up front. I don't know where this was filmed. If I had to guess, it's probably up north based on the accents. I don't know how many families they had to get through to get the 3 families they did. But it is. It's powerful. Many of you grew up like I did. We have kids now. Our parents are still alive. So you've got those 3 generations living. So listen to this as it goes. I'm going to narrate just a few little sections where they have script up on the thing. And just listen, think about what it says, and we'll talk about it when we get done. We had 3 generations answer the same question.
When you were a kid, what did you do for fun?
So we go blueberry picking, for instance. That's so cute. But it was true.
We grew watermelons, plantains.
I found an old sign, which was big enough for me to sit on. It made a great toboggan. It was very slick, very fast.
I had a few fish in my basket, and I looked up on this bluff, and here's this black bear sitting there watching me. If he starts chasing me, I'm going to keep throwing the fish out of my basket until he's gorged and he won't bother me.
And what did you like to do for fun?
You know, you go door to door, get a group of kids, and you play lots of games, hide and seek, just going out to the field and playing baseball.
And we build these massive forts, you know, the kind that you can actually sit in and play in, you know, with our friends, and it was just really wonderful.
So what do you like to do for fun?
Video games, definitely.
I like to go on my phone,
text. Some email.
My favorite thing to do in the world is definitely watching videos and playing video games. Those take up so much of my time.
3 hours, or 3 to 4 hours a day.
Same.
5 hours straight.
Just last week, I watched 23 episodes of a TV series in less than 4 days.
I forget. I'm in a house. I have parents. I have a sister. I have a dog. I just think I'm in the video game. I completely get lost.
I would die if I don't have my tablet.
Whenever I feel upset, I'd play video games and I'd feel normal. It's really wonderful.
When your daughters grow up, your great-great-grandkids, what do you think will happen if this trend continues?
It's scary to think that they'll never have to leave the house.
Cindy grew up doing a lot of the things that I did and enjoyed, and I see what my grandsons are doing today, and it's mind-boggling.
By the time they have kids, it's going to be a really different environment.
I actually feel a little sad because I feel like he's missing out on what's out there in the beautiful world.
Let's make sure it doesn't stop with us.
That special connection with nature, I think it's innate in all children, but needs to be nurtured.
You know, oh man, where do you start after that one? Is that you? I mean, I don't know where this show reaches. Get asked that question a lot. You know, who listens? I said, I don't know, but a lot of people say it's a good show. And I have met some people from kind of far off who listen to it. You know, you got three generations of people sitting there, and they're just talking. I urge you, really, go on, Google it. It's Nature Valley, Three Generations is the name of the commercial. And it's hard in a situation like this not to come down on parents. I'm a parent. I have kids. Totally different world than when we were growing up. And in some respects, I think, you know, video games and technology, I mean, I don't like to deal with them every day, and I'm an adult. But kids, they just love this stuff. It's entertaining. It's like the one boy said, you know, he says, it just gets lost in the video game. But is what we grew up doing outdoors, whether it's hiking or fishing or, you know, running around building forts, is that going to stop with us? This show is about the next generation. There's a lot of National Wild Turkey Federation. Everywhere you turn, discovertheforest.org, everywhere you turn, they're trying to reach out to kids because that's the generation that we're losing. Look at it again. It's and you see the parents. I mean, they don't exactly know what to do when they're asked the question about what their kids are going to do. And I think you can tell that in the answers. The answers are not, I mean, they're kind of, but yeah, technology, it's, you know, in one sense, when I was thinking about this coming to the studio today, it's a safe babysitter. I mean, you know, the kids are there at home. You don't have to worry about what's happening outside, the lunatics out there or whatever, but that just means you have to go with them. You have to find the time, make the effort, get them away from those games, get them outside. You know, I'd have to do it with mine. My kids are no different from anybody else's. We're so busy. A lot of the times, it weeks when I don't go outside and run around with a dog or go hiking or go fishing, and you know, and it affects my kids because my kids sit at home because I don't let them just go run around the neighborhood. We don't live in the neighborhood, but when they're outside, I want to know what they're doing outside. I want to be able to watch them. So I understand that. I don't want to come down too hard on parents, and I don't want to think I'm criticizing people for the, you know, it, but it takes an effort. You're going to have to make an effort to get those kids out there. But that's a powerful ad. You know, I grew up in the country, so my dad would have some of the same things, except I built barbed wire fences and did the garden. And you know, things I love to do, of course, you know all about them. Anything outdoors, I'm in it. And my kids, luckily, I've exposed that to them, and they're the same way. But it's just, when you see a 7 or 8 year old kid on video, and his first thing out of his mouth, and he points his hand at the camera, and he goes, "Play video games." Boy, that's make you think. In conjunction with that, I've had this for a while. This is off the Independent headline. Our attention span is now less than a goldfish. It's a Microsoft study. This is from May of 2015. It's Christopher Hutton's the writer. The humans have become so obsessed with portable devices and overwhelmed by content that we now have attention span shorter than that of the previously jokingly juxtaposed goldfish. Microsoft surveyed 2,000 people and used electroencephalograms, EEGs to the rest of us, and I can't believe I got it right, to monitor the brain activity, another 112 in the study, which sought to determine the impact that pocket-sized devices and the increased availability of digital media and information have had on our daily lives. Among the good news is we now can multitask more. The bad news is in 2000, the average attention span was 12 seconds, but this has now fallen to just 8. The goldfish is believed to be able to maintain a solid 9. And it goes on to say, while digital lifestyles decrease sustained attention overall, it's only true in the long term. Early adopters and heavy social media users front-load their attention and have more intermittent bursts of high attention. They're better identifying what they want, don't want to engage with, and need less to process and commit things to memory. And it goes on to talk about, you know, a lot of us will watch TV and be on our phone at the same time. Can't be good for us when your attention span is no greater than a goldfish. So that's the sobering part of this show. I'll try to be a little more upbeat next time around. So hang on through the bottom of the hour. We'll be back on the other side with more Woods and Water, South Carolina. Boy, leave it to a simple little thing to make you realize you can't take yourself too seriously. Or divorce. My goodness. Or d'oeuvres. Thank you. Appreciate the correction. That's when the uncultured side of you that's been there your whole life just comes streaming to the top. Oh, me. Welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. Thank you for the text on how to say the... It took me a second to realize what it was, and I was thinking, what is... Oh boy, you really blew that one. Anyway, whatever it is, I appreciate it. And y'all know what I'm talking about anyway. So, heavy hors d'oeuvres. Thank you. Cecil the Lion. You know, you hesitate sometimes to get into what is a political issue when it meets up with hunting and trophy hunting. You know, and I've had a lot of conversations with a lot of people about what trophy hunting is, and it's different for every person. There's 5 stages to a hunter, and if you've never hunted, it would do you well to read the 5 stages of a hunter, because it gives you a natural progression of what hunters go through from start to finish. Some people get stuck in stages. Some people quit before they get to us, before they finish the whole thing. Those of us who've been in our whole lives, I think we all know where we are. You know, a trophy hunt could be one that I don't even pick up a gun. You know, it sits there in the corner of the deer stand or the duck blind, but I shoot 200 pictures. You know, it changes for everybody. Trophy hunting in Africa is totally different from what we experience here in the United States. I love to read two of my favorite African authors, Peter Hathaway Capstick and Robert Rourke. Pick up one of their books, read a little bit about what Africa hunting is all about. And these books were written, you know, back in the golden age of hunting in Africa. Nothing like what it is today. It's so closely monitored, controlled, and... Anyway, Cecil the Lion. Hesitate to go there, but I feel like I need to, if nothing else, to explain the differences between what people see as hunting here or trophy hunting here and what it is in Africa. It's expensive to go to Africa. Well, reasonably expensive. I think what makes Africa more expensive is getting there, getting back, and if you bring something back to be mounted, there's the real cost in a whole African safari. Although you can... you know, a pick list of I want to shoot this. This is $8,000, but that pales in comparison. Or our American hunting pales in comparison to most African hunting. And so I wanted to give kind of an equal view. So I went and found an article by One Green Planet, 5 Reasons Trophy Hunting is Not Conservation. And I'm not going to get bogged down in this too much because I don't like to read a whole lot. I'm going to interject some things here and there. But anyway, the first point is trophy hunting can hurt the overall population of a species. And their quote in here is approximately 600 lions are killed every year on trophy hunts, including lions and populations that are already declining from other threats. The other threats they mention there are the local population. I mean, a lot of areas, you know, these wildlife refuges where these animals live, where you go on photo safari and they're protected and all that, when there's not enough game there, those lions jump right across the thing and start killing cows and people and, you know, so in some of these countries, poaching and the ordinary guy who's trying to make a living with a few cows, they're going to kill more lions than a guy going down to Africa trophy hunting. And trust me, they're not allowing people to go kill lions in areas that their population is in decline or they're threatened, because these countries manage those populations because of the money involved. And we'll get into that a little bit later on. And they also go in this into Michigan wolf hunting. The Michigans and wolves in Michigan, I believe, have been removed from the endangered species list, and they're going to be hunted. And they put in here hunted for trophies. You got to understand, once these populations get, these predator populations get big enough, they start either wearing out what they normally would eat in the area they live, or they start interacting with humans, and that's the reason they need to be controlled. It's not a trophy hunt. It's a control function of game managers worldwide. Number two, does it really bring in money to help the animals in local communities? And they quote a study here, revenues constitute only a fraction of a percent of GDP, and almost none of that ever reaches rural communities. We'll talk about that in a minute, too. And they keep hammering on this, regarding the statement that trophy hunters do a lot for conservation. It's true that some portion of some hunters' fees go to conservation in some countries, but it's rarely the major source of conservation funding. We'll talk about that. Trophy hunting is elitist. Now, here's where you can put a little bit of that in there, elitist being, if you want to tie that to having money, because it costs to go hunting. And they reference, their example here is the Trump brothers, Donald Trump's sons. You know, it showed some pictures of them with an elephant and, you know. And they say there are other ways the brothers could have helped the people of Zimbabwe. True conservation activities should involve the local community in a way that is sustainable, and trophy hunting does not accomplish this ideal. Number four, trophy hunting can be linked to poaching. I can maybe see a little bit of that, but in Africa, there are huge, huge penalties for someone who is a licensed outfitter, a concession holder, and a hunter. I mean, it goes the whole gamut to get caught in a poaching operation. And I'm not sure, Cecil, I don't think this was poaching. I think it was just the way they hunt in Africa, and we'll talk about that too. And it says in here, while a certain amount of regulation does take place, it's not enough to present the paucity of trophy hunts being used as cover for poaching. Well, I don't think so. Financial incentives, number five, financial incentives can hurt the population of a species. This can be a little true, maybe. But their big example is the Canadian seal hunt, which is mostly carried out by natives. And so anyway, and it talks about here, it says some humane ways that you can help protect animals include simple ecotourism. Got a little bit about that. Instead of going to shoot big game, why not take a trip to simply appreciate these animals in their natural state? Habitat protection. Visit national and international protected parks or contribute to these organizations. Hardly agree. Contribute all you want. If you hunt and fish, you contribute 1,000 more times than most people who contribute to World Wildlife Fund or some of these other because studies show very little of the money contributed to those people gets back to ground roots conservation. It's all spent in Washington, D.C. and getting their agenda across. Support organizations like the World Society for the Protection of Animals, World Wildlife Fund, you know, some of these places. And if you live in Michigan, get involved with the Keep Michigan Wolves Protected movement. So anyway, that's from OneGreedPlanet.org. So there's the opposing view. Me as a hunter, I read that, I look at that, and I say, nice fantasy land. Because as long as humans are here, and that's probably one of the things I like to see is humans get rid of, as long as we're around, we have an impact far beyond what we think, just in the fact of habitat loss, because we build more houses to live in. It happens right here in Greenville. It happens across the state, across the nation, and in Africa too. And we've got a little bit about that in these. This is, I did a lot of study on this, and it's taken a little bit longer, but hey, it's just information I'd like to get out there. HunterGreen.org, which is an organization that is tasked, or their task is to reintroduce hunters into mainstream society and say, look, we have a place. We provide the dollars for conservation. We provide meals. Shane Mahoney's organization, we're going to have him on the impact of hunting as far as revenue and the impact on the food supply in the United States and Canada is huge. And in Africa, when you kill an animal, you don't get to take the meat. The meat goes to the villages. And I'm trying to think, see if I have, if I can find this. Well, we'll talk about it in a second. But anyway, this article addresses some of those others, and it's addressing photographing versus hunting. Ecotourism, as photography is called in Africa, is not actually having a positive impact on local economies or habitats. It's an estimated in some places only 7% of the money brought in from ecotourism actually stays in the country. That's not close to the hunting revenue, which is as high as 75% staying in the country, and particularly in more remote areas where funding is needed the most for wildlife conservation. As if snapping a photo is not done enough already, let us bring Botswana's lion hunting ban front and center. Annually, an estimated $1.26 million of loss directly goes to the protection, studying, and conservation of the lion, which is not endangered. We can thank ecotourists for not just shipping their revenue out of the country, but also lobbying to make this ban happen for greater profit and to get rid of competition on lands from hunting outfitters. Hunting accounts for over 74% of the funding to protect wildlife in Botswana. So there's your ecotourism as opposed to hunting. Anti-poaching and politics. Ecotourism tends to bring out a lot of what we call weekend warriors. That reflects in photographers' unwillingness to travel to politically unstable countries. In fact, recent political instability accounted for a 75% drop in ecotourism in Zimbabwe, leaving hunters as the single largest profit center, not just for wildlife conservation, but also revenue to locals. So there's a little bit of what we're saying. Unless we consider the hunting revenue that pays the salary of over 500 anti-poaching game scouts to help secure the future and responsible management of endangered wildlife in Zimbabwe. We also need to consider the estimated 150 more private anti-poaching scouts that are entirely financed by local hunting outfitters. So, there's the music. Man, I can never get through this stuff as quick as I think. Hang on through the break. We're going to try to finish up with Cecil, and I got a few more things to talk about. So, we'll be back on the other side. Welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. While I look through some of this information, I'm never going to get through it all. Maybe that's why I overdo so I can. But then I feel like I've gypped you. You haven't gotten the full. But anyway, maybe you'll get enough out of this one. The next one I've got is from Wide Open Spaces. And the title of it is Trophy Hunting May Be the Key to Saving Endangered Big Game. If we can set aside the emotion that the subject of trophy hunting typically elicits, we'll see that trophy hunting is in fact a sound and effective conservation and wildlife management tool. Again, we're talking about Africa here. It's a different ball game in Africa. I mean, things in Africa can kill you quickly, and that's why I say when they're not fenced in. These lions are not fenced in. They're free to roam wherever they want to go, and I think that was one thing that Cecil did. He kind of got off of the protected area into another area. And whether you agree with bow hunting and all that, that's beside the point. We're just trying to talk about trophy hunting and the differences, because we here in the U.S., we see this lion get killed in trophy hunting, and oh, it's horrible, but it's a good tool. I encourage you to do some research on your own. I'm just giving you my opinion. In a nutshell, here's how it works. The wildlife management and conservation programs that are vital to protect and otherwise benefit exotic big game animals and by extension, other animals in the ecosystem hunted by big game require money to operate. And it has an example here that South Africa had to earmark an additional $7 million in extra funding for anti-poaching measures. Last year, 22,000 elephants were killed by poachers in South Africa because the ivory trade is so lucrative. And the governments don't have the GDP to so a lot of this protection comes from hunting fees. People go in and take, and look, management says we can take so many of this animal a year and not hurt the population. Again, we're talking in places where hunting is legal in Africa. I'm going to have to skip through some of this because I'm not going to get to it all. Black rhinos. It's one of the big things. An American hunter placed a winning bid of $350,000 for one Namibian rhino permit. All of that money was to support continuing rhino conservation. Protests and outrage. He withdrew his offer because he was getting death threats, kind of like this guy in Minnesota. There was a story that someone had offered $1 million for that, but he withdrew that bid after receiving death threats too. Some of this big money might skew those governments down there, but their gross domestic product is nothing like here in the United States. And I have a couple of I'm going to skip through some of this stuff because I just don't have time to get to it all. Got some other things I want to talk about, but I want to leave you with, and at least this is Robert Rourke, one of his quotes. Man can understand a lion because a lion is life in its simplest form, beautiful, menacing, dangerous, and attractive to his ego. A lion has always been the symbol of challenge, the prototype of personal hazard. You get the lion, or the lion gets you. And I have a lot more information here on, and in fact, there's some stories that go on after this, after the hype and all in here in the United States, and the word gets back to people in Zimbabwe, and they're like, somebody killed a lion? Big deal. Happens here all the time. And we got so upset over one lion, the same day that he was killed, and you don't hear any uproar about this, there were five elephants killed down there, a mom, what they think was a mother, and some younger ones, for their tusks, to go to China for some medicinal purpose. So before we get caught up in the hype of the media, and yes, I don't like that he suffered so long and all, that's beside the point. But before you latch onto that word trophy hunting, you got to know the setting it's in, and it's not like what we have here in the United States. Hope that informed you a little bit more about what goes on and with lions and South Africa and the African game and all. I'll never get down there. My one chance to go was by myself, and then I have a youngest daughter at home that said, if you go to Africa, I want to go with you, and one of two things will happen. I'll never be able to pay for the trip, or we'll never come back because she won't want to leave all the animals. So anyway, take it for what it's worth. I'm not going to get to the two kids in Florida. We'll put that off and talk about that a little bit next week because I've got a few other things that I want to get out of the way. But if you've been keeping up with that story, two 14-year-old kids, your first reaction is, what in the world were they doing off in a boat by themselves? Oh, that's horrible. What kind of parenting is that? If you grew up on that side doing something, I mean, if you grew up in Florida, if you grew up boating, accidents still happen. But there's something refreshing about two teenagers in a boat just going and having fun, fishing, exploring. So you have to be careful there again about how hard you come down on the parents because the kids were just doing it. And if you read into the later stories, they weren't allowed to be out in the ocean. Then you're not going to be able to keep kids under your thumb all the time. You have to let them go at some point. And in one of the stories, the parents said they thought they were going to be in the intercoastal waterway in the little river that runs by the town there, and instead they were out in the ocean. So we'll get to that next week because there's some things there you need to think about, some research about the mental capacities of teenagers as opposed to adults. And then I've got some things, why didn't I have an EPIRB, a spot? We go offshore here 60, 70 miles. one of the clans I go with, we have an EPIRB, and we have a spot, and the spot sends back a message every 30 minutes, given our coordinates. It's an email message, bounces off a satellite, goes to a computer. They know exactly where we are at any given moment. My one question is, probably because they weren't supposed to be offshore, that's why they didn't have something like that in the boat with them. But I encourage you, if you have a boat at all, even on upstate lakes, you know, you, when it comes to an accident or something that's preventable, something like that, well, I take that back. An EPIRB, you don't need that on Lake Harwell. There's enough boaters out there. If you have trouble, you can get it. But offshore, but I'm just saying, you can never be too prepared. So we'll get into that a little bit later on. I got to get to some fun stuff here. And one of the great stories coming from last week was a Kentucky man arrested after shooting down a drone. And this is from the Washington Times. The headline here is, it was hovering over his sunbathing daughter. And I'm like, give that man a gold medal. If you're wondering, there are 50 states in the United States. 11 states have laws regarding drone use. 26 have proposed regulations. 10 of them, the legislation has died, and 3 of them have done nothing. Kentucky is one of those where it's been proposed. But anyway, he shot down an $1,800 drone hovering over his sunbathing daughter and was arrested. Now, he was released at the next day or whatever. He says, my daughter comes in and says, Dad, there's a drone out here flying. This William H. Meredith, 47, told a local Fox News affiliated reporter Tuesday. The Bullock County father shot at the drone, which crashed in the field near his yard. Now, listen, he did it well. He said, I went and got my shotgun and said, I'm not going to do anything unless it's directly over my property. He said, the drone disappeared when his daughter waved it off. He said, within a minute or so, it came back. It was hovering over top of my property, and I shot it out of the sky. One story I read, he said, I didn't shoot it with a .22. I went and got number 8 buckshot, or birdshot, to shoot it down. I'd have used number 3s or number 4s. I'd want to see pieces flying off of it, and it wouldn't have landed in the field next door, I can promise you. He said, shortly after it happened, 4 men showed up his door to confront him and changed their mind because he had a 40-millimeter Glock on him. This is my kind of dad. So, you know, in a lot of these states out west, drones are funny. I mean, they're here to stay, you know, but they can be dangerous. But anyway, Alaska, Montana, and Colorado, in case you don't know, already have laws that prohibit drones in hunting. Idaho and Wisconsin say it's already covered under their existing law. Wyoming, New Mexico, and Vermont hunters have petitioned to have laws set up on the books about drones. So, anyway, that was kind of a good one. I like that. South Carolina actually has a bill on the books, a bill that's been introduced. Short summary of what it says. If you operate a remote piloted aerial vehicle equipped with a camera recording device above to enter upon or above the lands of another without the consent, you're guilty of a misdemeanor. So, which is not strong enough as far as I'm concerned, but it's a start. You know, it's interesting, really interesting. But I love that guy. They showed up to give him grief, and he has a 40-millimeter Glock on this thing. Gosh, time gets away from you. Let's see. Let's get something fun here. I do have something here. Oh, where'd it go? Oh, it's about how to boil peanuts. Well, shoot. It's like it up and disappeared on me. Oh, well, maybe we'll get to that again later. Forestwood Cup is coming up in a few weeks. The field is announced. Of course, you know that Anthony Gagliardi, who's a regular on this show, will be there. Brandon Cobb from Greenwood, South Carolina, is going to be there. I don't know Brandon. He qualified through the Angler of the Year standings. So he's got to have done pretty well during the year. Anthony will be there at Brandon. And then we have Todd Alton from Lake Wildy, South Carolina. He entered through one of the Rayovac series. And then, of course, our two guys from South Carolina, Patrick Walters and Geddes Brandon from University of South Carolina, will be there. It's going to be a fun time. It's going to be hot. I'll be doing a lot of coverage on this. I hope to, we're actually going to have a guest host the day, that Saturday. Hopefully I'll be in a position to call in and give you some updates. Here's a little funny one for you. 25 practical survival uses for duct tape. One of the things I like here is make a drinking cup. You know, you see all sorts of stuff, but it says some creative folding and sticking can result in a cup you can drink from. Repair your glasses. You know, use Revenge of the Nerds type with it in the middle or off to the sides. But hey, duct tape is a great thing. Fashion a belt. Your pants can start falling down if you're in a survival situation. You can duct tape it, fold it over, loop it through, and it becomes a belt. You just never know. But anyway, I'll get some of those more later on too. It's a good story out of Whitmire, South Carolina, about a bringing back the quail. There's a project going on down through there that's in conjunction with a lot of people. We're going to have somebody on to talk about that. Wow. Story about why more women are hunting. Some interesting stuff there. We'll get into more of that later. Just out of time again. It just comes and goes so quickly. When there's good. Oh, here's how to boil peanuts. Real quick, you ready? You can use fresh green ones or dried ones. You want 2 cups of salt per gallon of water. They tried sea water and it worked really good. Green peanuts, 2 to 3 hours. Dried peanuts, 6 to 8. Taste to your specifications. Hey, get out there. Be careful when you do. Don't forget the camera. We'll cover some more next week. Hope you'll join us. See you then.